Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to you, Jenny Green, for her entertainment this afternoon. It's Tuesday the 6th of July and this is Game On. Coming up today, fresh from her time in the Serie A, Louise Quinn is in studio to discuss her time with Fiorentina and how she thinks Italy will fare against Spain in tonight's Euro semi-final.
And off goes the Napoli star again. Jinx inside and away from Tielemans. Insigne! World class Lorenzo Insigne! A spellbinding strike!
Absolutely wonder strike. Unbelievable from him. What a goal.
Mark Langdon will talk Euros with us too and bring us up to date on the curious case of Barcelona's wage bill. In Gaelic football, the Inform Orla Finn joins us ahead of the championship throw-in for the Cork ladies.
Hannah Goni, Goverley, Agus Hubbard, Hielburn, Son O'Hannah, Agus Nesh, Nishigan, Melissa, Agus Nesh, Inchol, the Chastman, Son, Agus Borde, Fatna, Gessna, Corkig, Kayla, Orla Finn, Gwashach, Duntach, and over in 5-10 Hannah Looney.
Plus in golf, Gary Murphy is with us to reflect on the Irish Open and give us his picks for the run into the Open at Royal St George's.
Game on 2FM.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now to breaking news straight off the bat. The British and Irish Lions Castle Lager Lions series match against the Vodacom Bulls on Saturday has been postponed with the view to rescheduling or to accommodate an alternative opponent. While the Springboks second test against Georgia on Friday is also being reviewed, and this is of course all because of COVID. Four Bulls players and one member of management returned positive tests, which in combination with their close contacts made it impossible for them to field a team according to series safety protocols. So these regulations will make provision for additional midweek matches to be played. And then when it comes to the Georgian game, four positive results are among the Georgian team and four additional positive tests among Springbok players, plus six among management, including their head coach, Jack Ninabar, and one masseur. So that has really complicated planning. They will be reviewed by the medical advisory group on Wednesday morning. So that doesn't look good for them. COVID is not going away, but by the looks of it, they will find ways to play these games and to make the Lions series go ahead. Well, they are over there now anyway, but it'll be an interesting space for the next couple of days as they try and sort out things. Louise Quinn is with me in studio, fresh from her time in Italy. Louise, your time in Fiorentina has come to an end. You're back now in Dublin, in Ireland. How was the whole experience for you?
An experience is the word. It had a bit of everything. It was so tough, obviously, being away during COVID, everything like that, and just adapting to, again, a new country, a new experience. You know, one of the top countries in Europe for their football. So it was just a really, really exciting time for me, massively challenging. But, you know, overall, I loved it, and I felt like I gave everything and put everything, my best foot forward in trying to make it, you know, the best experience for me.
Well, I follow you on Instagram and you definitely look like you're having a good experience anyway, living in a beautiful place.
Yeah, it is probably the most beautiful city I've laid my eyes on, to be honest, and such a friendly, warming city. Obviously, it was nice to kind of have the run of the place, to be honest. I was on my bike every day, cycling around the Duomo, going along the Arno, getting as many coffees in as possible. I had to adapt to the espresso and macchiatos a lot. I was more of a flat white, but they've never heard of that. A flat white kind of girl, and they never heard of a flat white. Just different than how just passionate they are about everything, from their football to their food. And they really are kind of in their own little world, but they love it. And you know, and you can even see that kind of being expressed now in the men's team in the Euros. They're just so passionate and are really just going for it in every way, and they back themselves.
What's the standard of women's football like over there?
Do you know what? It is excellent, and it's only going to get better. There's still a lot of stuff to still improve on, but there are basically the entire women's national team plays in Italy. So you are playing against the best players. that are around Italy and have been for years. And you know, Juve would obviously be one of the top teams there. AC Milan have come on really quickly, signed some absolutely excellent players. You know, Fiorentina were definitely up there, but it seems now that the other teams have definitely kind of caught up in terms of how they want to progress and make it a more professional league, because at the moment it is actually still deemed an amateur league. But the clubs themselves are now really, really starting to back it. But yeah, it would actually won't be officially professional for another two seasons.
Why Italy? Like, you went there, Steph went there. What's the attraction about playing over there?
I just think what you see from them, you see this absolute love and passion for the game, and that was exactly what happened when I went there. You know, you do hear a lot of things about, and maybe across from the national team, the women's national team, that there wasn't so much backing and support, and you do see that. But when you are then in the city that you're playing in, so, you know, Florence, Firenze, they were just mad for it. And I would actually just be walking down the road and someone is screaming Forza Viola at me or asking about how the result went. I'd be doing my shopping and they'd be like, oh, you're the Fiorentina player. And it was mad. It really was. So they're always just up on the results, how the game went, you know, and they'd be really honest. They were like, really bad game at the weekend, wasn't it? And I'd be like, mm-hmm, yeah. But then the men weren't doing, you know, great. So it was actually like, you know, you girls are kind of leading the way here in Florence for us. And yeah, so like their absolute passion was, I haven't found it anywhere else kind of like that, to be honest.
It sounds like there's a huge amount of potential there for growth. And I think it's fair to say that there's potential all around the world for growth of the women's game. But the reality is not everyone is going to capitalise on it. But it sounds like there's a lot of potential in Italy for it to grow and for things to improve.
Yeah, exactly. And as I said, it's definitely being led by the national team. Then that helps us, you know, that not all those players are being just fed into a lot of the teams still in the Serie A. So there's some that are, you know, very nicely spread out, obviously mainly with Juve, but you know, Roma have come on leaps and bounds. They've got some brilliant players, you know, to me. So they finished actually in fifth, so we pipped them to fourth on the last day. But for me, they were actually probably just one of the hardest games. You know, how they were organised, how they set up, how they liked to attack. It was just so full on. And sometimes in a lot of the games that you play in, they're actually, you know, slightly more slower paced. You know, and that was something I kind of picked up on in the training sessions. But obviously that goes from club to club. So you can see the teams that are really pushing on, they play just at a much higher pace, and are really getting far more tactical. And then just individually, the players were brilliant. And so as a defender, I really had to adapt and learn how the Italian players play. And that's, you know, even so with their back to goal, you didn't know which way they were turning. They were going to flick it around you, flick it under you, nutmeg you, you know, lay it off and then just make another run. And they were excellent at using their bodies. Yeah. And then sometimes kind of what we're seeing in the Euros now, they will go down if they need to go down and they will make sure that, you know, you maybe get sent off, which happened to me against Juve at the, you know, near the start of the season. But that was just like the biggest lesson then I learned, you know, to what would have been maybe okay in England, you know, a little bit of grappling, a little bit of fighting to kind of take them off the ball. No, they'll...
You can't be doing that.
No, you can't be doing it. So it was, you know, I really had to learn how to time tackles and read body language and kind of see what they were doing and maybe what they were, you know, which direction they were going to go.
We've heard a lot throughout this Euros about how Italian football have a certain philosophy that they want all their underage teams and their development squads and all the rest to play a certain way, and there is an overall philosophy. Does that extend to the women's national team as well then?
Yeah, I think so. They still have their, you know, so they all train at the national campus, which is actually in Florence. You know, so excellent facilities, you know, how they go about things. So even when we were finished the season and we had international break, you know, and the girls were obviously fairly tired from the season that was just gone, and they had to go into camp, and they got their schedule first 3 days, three double days in a row that they're out on the pitch, more than likely mid 20 up to almost 30 degrees. But that's, you know, they're really starting to put that into you. And so that was a massive thing for me to kind of have to adapt to, you know, kind of during pre-season you do go through some double sessions, but they loved it, and that was their way about it, and they didn't see it any differently, or that it should be done any differently. Whereas, and I suppose a lot of us foreigners, or in Italian it was called stranieri, so the strangers were we were used to some different methods, so it really was a massive kind of adapting culture to go into.
And what now then, Louise? You're home now. You know, we know that there are World Cup qualifiers coming up, and that Vera Pau expects her players to be playing at a certain level. Where do you go from here then?
Yeah, that's kind of the exciting bit for me, and to be honest, still a bit of the unknown. So I left Fiorentina. I still would have had opportunities in Italy if I wanted them, but for me, it was definitely just more of a personal thing, you know, also to want to be closer to home, and that's always been the case. But also just, I love the league in England. I love the pace of it. I love what it's about, and also just trying to get the best out of me from it. So I will always try to step up, be a leader, and try to do that in Fiorentina, and at times was definitely had to do it very well, but to actually fully communicate, you know, what I felt kind of either helped me myself when I was on the pitch, or to help my teammates out, I did still find that difficult, and and adapting to some of their methods, some I loved, but some were, you know, difficult to get a grasp of. So, and for me then, the pace of the game in England is just excellent. And, you know, I even feel when I've gone into the last, you know, international camps, I maybe just wasn't as up to pace as I wanted to be. And, you know, there's still, like, I still feel like plenty of legs in me in yet. So, like, I still want to kind of get the best out of me. And I feel like in England, I was able to be, you can be that little bit more individual and get that source of backing and training that you need. And and definitely just kind of a personal thing of wanting to be, you know, closer to home, being in Italy, experience that without any of my kind of loved ones around was also just a very, very tough experience.
And pandemic.
The pandemic, that thing.
That happened as well.
That did, yeah. So it was definitely, something then that, and for me, just the, you know, the pace and quality that's going on in England right now is
yeah, it's where it's happening. Like.
Exactly, that's where you want to be.
So how do you go about now getting a new club?
Just really kind of putting yourself out there. You know, you hate to say it, but obviously I have an agent then who's, you know, really putting out the feelers there. And and then it's up to me to obviously just kind of talk to as many managers as possible and kind of put myself across to them. You know, I feel like, yeah, you can kind of, you see what you get from me on the pitch, but I feel like if I can kind of get my my thoughts and my personality across them as well, you know, to kind of see that, you know, I've always wanted to be and always have been, I feel like, a team player, and to try kind of trying to get that across. And yeah, sometimes it's difficult, you know, I now feel like I'm in a different category now that I'm a little bit older, and it is such a pacier game. So when sometimes you're being told you're a little bit older and a little bit slower, you know, you want to kind of prove them wrong and let them know that I have the experience and the brains and the, that kind of team spirit sort of personality, and, you know, to bring that out. And there's, and I want to get that across to them.
Well, we are seeing the value of the older defenders in these Euros, and Italy in particular are one of them. And just before we do move on to the game tonight, I just want to ask you one thing about Cristiano Ronaldo, because Maurizio Sarri has come out today and said that he found it really difficult to deal with him, because when he was making decisions and trying to manage him, he had to keep thinking about his personal interests, his 200 million Twitter followers and the whole brand Ronaldo, and the fact as well that a lot of people are now, or a lot of younger people are now, supporting teams because of individuals rather than the team, and Ronaldo falls into that category. How big a star is he in Italy?
Yeah, he is massive. And obviously when we kind of started to go a little bit more up north, you know, towards Turin, and obviously we were playing them, you really then actually saw the more he was advertised and just how much he is appreciated. So that was, you know, it was something when I was in Florence, everyone was just, you know, obsessed with Fiorentina, and that was it. So you actually didn't see as much about Ronaldo there, because yeah, they didn't care. They, you know, they wanted their now Frank Ribery, who has also just left the club recently. But you know, he was the star there, and you know, Vlahovic, the Serbian, he was, you know, young player and just scoring goals for fun, and he's the guy that basically kept Fiorentina up, to be honest. But yeah, he is the brand, and I think. And Sarri just seems like that manager who just wants to be a football coach. Mm-hmm. That's him. That's all he wants. He doesn't want the glitz, the glam. Like, you see him on the side of the pitch. You saw him with Chelsea when he had his Champions League medal or league medal, and he was staring at it in awe. And that's, you know, he really has that purity about him. So, yeah, listen, it was always going to be difficult to manage the most famous footballer in the world, really. Yeah. But
most followed person on Instagram next.
Exactly. So.
Now Mark Langdon joins us on the line from the Racing Post. Mark, we're going to get into that game in a minute. I just want to quickly talk to you about the situation that Barcelona are in. So they can't register a few key players here: Lionel Messi, Sergio Aguero, Memphis Depay, due to the salary cap.
Yeah, that's right. Eric Garcia as well. They've found themselves in a very difficult position with the La Liga salary cap. It was nearly 700 million for them last season. That's it's almost half that now, which still should be enough for any sort of well-run football club to be able to sort of put their wage bill within. But Barcelona, of course, a very special case, and this is causing huge problems for them, because not only can they not sign those players, of course, this is without Lionel Messi signing his contract, and he's now out of contract. So Barcelona are doing everything they can now to offload as many players as they possibly can to make sure they can get within the salary cap. The problem is that Philippe Coutinho, Samuel Umtiti, Pjanic as well, these are players on enormous wages, living a great life in Barcelona, and don't want to give it up. And Barcelona are now in this position where they may have to pay these players an awful lot of money to get them off the books. And even then, you know, they haven't got to go, and it's about finding them new clubs to go to. It just goes to show how poorly run Barcelona have been, that they've got themselves into this situation. Of course, some of it is coronavirus related, and that they've lost a lot of income, you know, due to the fact that nobody can go to the stadium. But a really difficult situation for Barcelona. One, and also a difficult situation for La Liga, because if La Liga enforce sort of heavy punishments on Barcelona, it could result, let's say, in Barcelona say, okay, we won't have Lionel Messi in our team, and they let him go to Man City or Paris Saint-Germain, for instance. That would enormously damage La Liga's brand and their sort of ability to sell sort of their TV rights around the globe. So La Liga really don't want to lose Messi. They can't let Barcelona off the hook. It's a really complicated situation for everybody. There's some bargains to be had at Barcelona. You know, even there's talk of maybe Antoine Griezmann being one that could be not let go for free, but certainly, you know, a much cheaper rate. Ousmane Dembele, the injured winger, might not even be registered. That is one way they're thinking of cutting their wage bill, is to not register the players that are injured at the moment. But that would mean Ousmane Dembele wouldn't be able to play until January at the earliest. Wolves have already signed the winger Trincao. And you know, Barcelona, there's certain players Barcelona don't want to leave. Pedri, who's been magnificent in the Euros, for instance, but he's somebody that other big teams might want. And so offloading players that Barcelona don't want that can fit elsewhere is really not an easy task for them at the moment.
Well, it's very hard to have any sympathy for them whatsoever. So Mark, the semi-final tonight, the first one, Spain-Italy. And in fairness, you had a lot of hope for Italy's chances in this competition, and you were right.
They've done better, I think, than a lot of people expected. I wasn't convinced by them necessarily right at the very start, before it started, but once they played their first game, I think you could tell then, and I think that's when I came on and said, they sort of blew me away, really, with how well that they played, because they didn't actually look like an international team. International football is so far removed now from club football, and the way that teams go and press the ball, and the way that they all move in unison, and there's that kind of collective. International football is a bit sort of more broken, really, and teams are more defensive. But Italy look like a club team, and they have got those club connections in certain positions. You know, Bonucci and Chiellini have been together for a long time, know each other's game inside out, you can see that, I think, within certain sort of positions, that everybody knows what they're doing. Mancini's done a great job. He would definitely be one of the best international managers around. The midfield's fantastic. If you like to watch, teams play good possession-based football, Jorginho, Barella, Verratti, it's just wonderful to see. My biggest question mark was whether they had the forwards maybe to go and win the competition. And I think we've seen in bits, sort of Insigne showing little moments of magic, Chiesa as well, and Immobile. They haven't got that kind of Lewandowski type that you can bank on to score goals. And so that's always the danger for them. Against Austria, they couldn't score for a long time, but they're a fun team to watch, and nothing like the kind of cliches. And they're really outdated, really, in terms of what Italian football is as well. It's much more progressive than people give it credit for.
Yeah, it really is. And Louise, that defence there that Mark mentioned, they have the second best defensive record behind England at the tournament and have conceded just 2 in 5 matches and kept 3 clean sheets.
Yeah, they are, the epitome of what every defender, should want to be, and that sort of, that connection and that partnership that they have. They are just standout, and you can see what they do for the team. You see when they're in the team huddle how much they, the team depend on them, rely on them. And it's the same. You see that, you've heard stories about Mancini that he's, maybe a bit much, but exactly for that, at international football, I think he's just exactly enough. You get those nuggets every few months from him, and they've listened. And again, you could see that there was a picture I was looking at the other day where he was in the team talk and just all eyes on him, and they loved it. And so they're and after that kind of season of Serie A, with the how tight it was at the top and the fights for the Champions League positions, that league is kind of buzzing right now, and so they're just going in filled with confidence.
Okay, Mark, very quick prediction for us.
I'll go for Italy 2-1.
Okay, thank you so much, Mark. Louise, you're going to stay with us now, so I'll get your prediction a little bit later when we get the team news. We will have that later in the show. For now, we're going to take a very quick break, and we have golf coming up with Gary Murphy, looking back on the Irish Open, and we'll also talk to Cork ladies footballer Orla Finn.
Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on. Go.
Now it is time to turn our attention to golf, and I'm delighted to be joined on the phone by Gary Murphy. Gary, the dust has settled now on the Irish Open at this stage. What were your thoughts on it?
It was different, Maria, I have to say. We're still kind of in a COVID restriction and COVID reality. So whilst it was nice to see, some crowds back, it's still a bit different. But I almost kind of felt that from the crowd, that they were trying to kind of cheer a little bit louder and make a bit of an effort for the players, which I think the players fully appreciated. But, still strange times, but it was great to see the crowds back. Mount Juliet, I thought, did really well. I was a little worried that it was going to get cut up pretty badly, but I think the course held up really well. As always, it's, immaculate condition. So from that point of view, it was all good. Just disappointing with the home players. They never really kind of caught fire, and not taking anything away from Herbert. He did great, but you'd love to have seen one of the locals involved.
What would you put that down to, Gary?
Golf. It's the hardest game in the world. So, you can't just arrive home. As much as they all want to. You know, you can't just arrive home and go, right, this is my week, I'm going to press a button and play as I want. I was disappointed with Rory. I really thought Mount Julia would have been kind of chicken feed for him, to be honest, but it just never happened. He's still fiddling around with the swing, I think, and not quite comfortable. Shane was disappointing. I think a tendency at times with some of them is they kind of come home and they're trying early too hard. Mm. And, you know, then you get in your own way and your frustration levels increase, your patience is down. And there's just so many good players nowadays. They've no given right to go out and do it. You know, you still have to go and perform. But I think in the end, like, it was quite an exciting finish, because the 18th hole is always scares the life out of most players, and had its few victims on Sunday as well. So I think all in all, it was a good week. I think the chat is that, you know, they might have gone back there next year, I'm not sure. So you'd kind of like to see Mount Julia possibly get another crack at it and get a full house and get some good weather and get the, you know, Kilkenny buzzing. And just difficult this year with the bubble, you know, the players aren't allowed out and all that goes with it. There's no tourists down and just tricky times.
And in terms of the date for the Irish Open, do you think it should be moved?
Possibly. You know, is 2 weeks before the Open ideal? I played a few of them when it was the week after the Open. And the thing as well, the tricky thing for that date previously would have been that you still had a USPGA to play in, which would have been kind of 3 weeks to a month after the Open. Now that the Open is the last major on the calendar, then there's a bit of a lull. So, and you get into kind of FedEx playoff for the Stars. Maybe the week after the Open could be a great date. And then you can be flexy enough with courses too. You're not too, you know, hung up on this idea of playing links golf before an Open. So maybe it might get spread around a little bit. But maybe the week after the Open could be a great date. It'll probably suit the lads coming back from the States schedule-wise too. So that could be something for the future.
Yeah, Rory and Shane both mentioned that actually after their final round, that a change could suit everybody a little bit better, and they're both very determined to always make it.
Yeah, I personally think September, especially if you're playing it inland in Ireland, I think it's the better time of year for the course, because, you know, the most courses have had the summer of a good growth and hopefully a bit of sunshine. Not that you can ever count on that in this place, but
absolutely not.
Maybe, yeah, with Wentworth as well, you know, something around there mightn't be a bad option either. And maybe, you know, try a few different dates and see which works best. But the number one thing is to try have the home players contending. But just, you could play it in January and you'd have a good tournament, really.
Yeah, Rory said after his third round that he finds it quite difficult to adapt to the courses at home when he's been away for so long and for so many years. So just getting used to the different types of greens and the different types of grass, and that just takes him a little bit of time.
But the big thing is the ball doesn't travel, because we're at sea level here, so the ball doesn't really travel as far as they're used to in the States. I mean, you can watch American golf every weekend and, you know, you're seeing crazy numbers where last week, even though the weather was great up to Sunday, it's just something they have to land, and that's the challenge of being a professional golfer. You know, you land in a different country most weeks if you play in Europe, and you have to acclimatise the whole time. Now, it's easier with these guys nowadays with all the monitors, and they can dial those numbers in a bit. They can dial the numbers in on the range, you know, but it's trying to get out in competition and adapt to adrenaline and all that sort of stuff, and maybe that's why some of them struggle coming in. But certainly I think that the ball flight's more realistic for us in these climates, whereas in the States it does tend to travel a lot further.
Both Shane and Rory said they were going to be practicing on links courses around over the next couple of weeks, and I did see pictures of Rory in Portmarnock today. When just looking at them over the weekend, I know Shane did finish better on the final day. Did you see anything at all from their play that might suggest they're going to take some form into the Open? Shane in particular trying to defend his title.
Well, Shane is doing the same thing as he did the last time. He finished with a good round. 66 was great on a Sunday, no matter where you are. And it was good that he, you know, got his head down on Sunday and tried to shoot the lowest score that he could. He's taken this week off to kind of tour around Ireland, I think, a bit, and play a bit of links golf, which is what he did in 2019. That worked out okay. So why change it? He's played a lot of golf recently as well, and he's going to the Olympics too, and then he's back to the States for the FedEx and all of that. So he still has a lot on his calendar. You know, and he could go and play in Scotland this week, which Rory is going to do. So, you know, they all see things differently. I think Rory normally likes to play before a major. Shane won his only major not playing the week before. So, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. The problem with Renaissance this week for Rory is the weather is going to be very wet. It's going to be soft. And then you're going to get down to Sandwich, which is a totally different climate down the southeast of England. It's a bouncy enough course anyway, with a lot of nuances. So I'm not sure how ideal that prep would be. But just to get into it, he's kind of more focused maybe of trying to get things right in competition possibly than Shane is at the moment. So they're both going their different avenues. But listen, you turn up in an open, you see the signs, you see the grandstands, you can get into that kind of tournament feel. And, you know, as you saw with Darren Clarke, like he was majorly out of form coming from the Scottish Open down to Royal St George's, and they went on to win. These guys can turn it on and off in a week. They're all great golfers, so I think at times form can be, you know, something that you don't have to, especially when it's a major. And the fact that Rory might be struggling a bit off the tee, you can get away with that at times. The distance these guys are hitting the ball now with utility clubs and two irons and whatever, so it's still all to play for and very exciting. And it's, you know, for a lot of guys too, it's double Ryder Cup points this week, and the lure of trying to get those three remaining spots and get in next week.
And Gary, just listening to Rory as well after the final round, you could see how disappointed he was and how he was lacking confidence, because he picked so many aspects of his game that he needed to work on. So do you think that disappointment of this weekend and the performances in particular are going to get into his head now in the next few weeks?
But that's the challenge, you know, that's the challenge they face week in, week out. You know, his team around him, his coaches and all of that, trying to, you know, get everything right, so he can just get out on the golf course and play his game. That's the hard thing. It's just a bit of a worry that he's struggling with his driver. I mean, that's always been the outstanding part of his game. And you would have hoped, you know, making swing changes, that it wouldn't affect his driving. That's, you know, for a guy to be able to stand up instinctively and just blast a 320 down the middle without really thinking about anything. You know, so to lose that bit of arsenal to his game is a little bit worrying. He might get away with it the next couple of weeks because it's a different style of golf, but when he gets back to the States and the FedEx, you know, you need to have that that club working properly. So I'm sure he'll be working hard on it the next few days. And Renaissance is wide enough too, so it's not a bad place to be trying a few things out. But I'd like to see him get back driving the ball well, because as challenging as Royal St. George's is, if you have a good driver in your hand and you just play it aggressive, I played there in 03, and I was astonished with a couple of the guys I was playing practice rounds with who were trying to plot the way around, and I was driving the ball well, and I just thought, you know, why not be aggressive and just go with it? It's a different, as all links golf courses are, if you can be confident to navigate the bunkers and just bust your driver, it's a completely different test from there, rather than trying to. It's very hard at times if you're hitting a lot of irons off tees and links courses to keep your rhythm and tempo, and that can creep into the other parts of your game. So I'd like to see Rory get his driver going this week, and that will be a big advantage for him for Royal St. George's.
Yeah, it was a bit of a common theme, all right, in a couple of the rounds where the conditions were tricky and a good few players were struggling off the tee, all a little bit loose. Let's have a chat about Lucas Herbert, because he was that player at a couple of stages. He weathered a few storms over the weekend, but he finished really well to take the trophy. But just what did you think of him, Gary? I found it difficult to watch him because I just never knew what he was going to do when he was standing over the ball.
Yeah, well, he's an exciting player. Like, he's a bit of a stand-up and, you know, give it a rip and go get it and hit it again. He'd a big win in Dubai, which is a kind of marquee event on the European Tour. So where they would have, you know, a bit like the Scottish Open this week, you'll have a few stars coming in. You know, so if he's able to win around there, he can pretty much win anywhere. He won well. You know, he was the guy with the lead, the guy they're all shooting at. But with everything, you need a slice of luck. And then, you know, he won it with his putter as well. He held the putts early in the front nine on Sunday that to keep his round going. And then he had two spectacular bunker shots coming in, especially the one on 16. You know, he's played Mount Juliet, I'd say, about 1,000 times. And, you know, that kind of back left pin or kind of middle left pin on 16, your front bunker to hit it stone dead was sensational. Then he had to do what he needed to do coming in. But it was a brilliant win. Good weekend for Aussie golf with Cameron Davis winning in the States as well. You know, new names coming through. The tour does need some fresh blood as well. Disappointing from a European tour point of view that Higo won in the States and we didn't get a couple of years out of him over here. But no, he's a good winner and it'll give him a good lift. And, you know, Ben Curtis won the second last time we were at Royal St. George's. So just because it's a major doesn't mean it, you know, it should be down to the stars to win. And it's good to see some fresh blood coming through.
Yeah, there was that subplot as well of the open places that were up for grabs, and there was quite a few challengers, inexperienced challengers really, that put in a really good effort, and Johannes Veerman was one of them. He wasn't really showing much form, but turned up over the weekend and deserved to finish strong.
Yeah, I've had an eye on him for a while because he's kind of earned the stripes. He played out in the Asian Tour and worked his way over to Europe, and I was in Munich a few weeks ago and saw him playing live, and like, he's a just fabulous golf swing. You'd wonder how he could ever hit a bad shot, but it's just professional golf's really deep at the moment, so you're always going to see new names coming through. And it was a big week for a lot of those regular European Tour players because the prize fund was kind of triple what it has been, you know, for the last probably 4 to 5 months. So there's added pressure on these guys coming down the stretch because, you know, they're playing for obviously open spots, but a lot of extra cash, trying to secure their card in a given week. And for Rickard Karlberg as well, it was, you know, to chip in on the last. And I think Veerman bogey in the last spent about 80 grand on the last, so it's you know, it's a lot of added pressure too. But he'll be thrilled to, you know, pick up a huge check, secure his rights for next season, and try press on for the rest of the year.
Cormac Sharvin was another one who had a good week. The last couple of holes were probably disappointing for him, but overall, I'd say he would have taken a huge amount from the Irish Open, Gary.
Yeah, it was a good week. He obviously had a huge finish in Lahinch. I think that's his best finish, 14th in the Irish Open. So it was a solid week, just disappointing. You know, if he didn't snuck a kind of 4-4 finish out of it, it would have been a really solid week. But it's given him a bit of confidence for Scotland this week. He's got another chance to try getting the Open, you know, but he's way down the race to Dubai for where he would like to be. So when these big events come around, you really have to cash in. So it's a big week for Cormac to get in and at least make the cut and try and make a, you know, a top 20 or hopefully a top 10 out of it, or, you know, the Holy Grail of trying to get one of those open spots. Were he to do that, he'd probably wrap up his card for the season. But, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Cormac and those kind of guys to, you know, get up that race to Dubai and get their card secured for next season, because you don't want to be getting out on tour and, you know, they've had a little bit of a blanket with COVID last year where they don't lose their status. That's not going to be the case this season. And it's precarious enough getting back to the Challenge Tour, and the way economies are going at the moment, you really want to stay on the main tour. So it's an important week for Cormac this week.
And just finally, Gary, before we finish up, a quick word on Graham McDowell. He was doing quite a lot of soul searching ahead of the tournament in his press conferences, but didn't have a great first day, but picked things up again and was pretty consistent over the weekend. What were your thoughts on his performance?
Graham is kind of, I'd say he's, you know, in the autumn of his career as such on the main tour, so he's in that tricky situation where he's achieved so much. The game has changed a lot for Graham too, in that, you know, there's a lot of courses, the way technology has gone, the distance these guys are hitting the ball, that he'd struggle to compete on. But in the back of his mind, he's still a great champion, so it's trying to fight that. He's trying to stay competitive. He's obviously going to be involved, of course, with the Ryder Cup, you know, but he still wants to do well in his own right. And he's had a wonderful career that's possibly, you know, a little bit on the slide. He's probably passed his best. But as we've seen him win recently on the PGA Tour, there are certain courses and and weeks that he can contend. And always down the stretch, he gets it done when he has to. It's just certain weeks, you know, just won't suit him. But he has to be patient and wait for them to come around. But it's hard, you know, when you're getting a little bit longer in the tooth and these young fellas are doing what they're doing. It's hard to stay competitive.
Okay, and very finally, Gary, a tip for the Scottish Open?
Fancy Dandy Sullivan last week. I think, you know, he's still breaking his neck to try to get in the Open. So there's a lot of stars on show this week. There's no doubt about that. John Rahm is back, US Open champion. But for a bit of value, Andy Sullivan might be the worst in the world.
Okay, well, Gary Murphy, as always, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll check in with you next week for our big Open preview.
Game on. Go.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour. Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now it is time to talk ladies football. I'm delighted to be joined by Orla Finn, who today picked up the PWC Player of the Month award and was also named on the Lidl team of 2021 for the Ladies National Football League. Orla, not a bad day.
Hi Marie. I'm delighted to be picking up the two awards today. So yeah, it's been a good day all around.
Yeah, you know, when you get these kind of individual awards, like, can you enjoy them, or are you always thinking about games and matches and All-Irelands and all the rest?
I suppose a bit of both. You know, it's nice to pick up the personal awards, but you know, you're always looking at the next match that's coming up, and I suppose looking back on the league, and we came up short against Dublin as well. You know, you'd always be looking back on the whole team performance too, you know. But as I say, it is nice to pick up the personal awards too.
So just that game against Dublin, it was obviously quite a disappointing one, because the way the year has been, it's important really to go into championship momentum, because the championship has come so quickly. It's starting this weekend. Was that loss particularly difficult, Orla?
It was a little bit difficult, but I suppose we're looking back over the league as a whole, and I think we played really well in lots of the games, and we got great, you know, match practice, and that's all you want to do. You know, we took the league as just play each game as best we could, and I think that's what we did. And, you know, we came up short against Dublin in the end, but like, we're going to park that now and look forward to the championship starting now on this Saturday.
Yeah, and just like in terms of your team as well, Orla, from watching the games over the last few months, I'd imagine that you learned quite a lot from the league, because there was challenging games and a lot of the games were high scoring, and it was important to get those high scores and show that you can do it, and you were well able to.
Yeah, definitely. And we have a few girls out through injury now at the moment, and it gave some younger girls, you know, a chance to step up and get some experience at playing full games, and even getting a chance to come on as a sub. So we've been delighted with how the league has went, and, you know, it will really set us up well now for the start of championship.
And it's pretty nice, must be pretty nice for somebody like you, Orla, who's a free taker, to go into league final. Okay, you don't win, but still come out with 8 points, just for your confidence when you are coming up against a team like Dublin.
Yeah, definitely. You know, all the games that we play, the more practice that I'm getting, you know, as you say, with the pressure of the freeze and stuff. So, you know, we took in the league, we just said we play every game as good as we could. And, you know, we just took each game as it came, and we were delighted to get to the league final in the end. And the chance of playing Croke Park this year was brilliant. And having a few spectators back as well was lovely, you know, with the championship last year and have no spectators. You know, you would notice it on the day of a game. So it was nice to have that extra bit of buzz on the league final day with the extra crowd there too.
Yeah, I think, you know, because ladies football as well has so much momentum behind it over the last number of years, and had been getting those crowds and those record-breaking crowds, it was quite difficult to park that almost when it was in such a flow, and there was just so much positivity around the game.
Yeah, I suppose ladies football has gone from strength to strength over the years. You know, I started playing with Cork Seniors in 2011, and the difference in the last number of years has just been crazy. You know, there's so much more publicity about the game now, and it's brilliant. It's only going from strength to strength, and I'd say it'll go even further in the next few years. So we're all delighted with what way it's going.
Yeah, it is actually brilliant to see it and just see how much the landscape has changed in such a short space of time. And even things like Orla, like you're playing now quite a while, and the fact that there's grants there now, there's expenses, you know, everything is getting better. There's going to be hopefully food after training for every team in a few years, that you'll never have to go looking for gear and all that sort of stuff. And it has really happened in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, I think they're going in the right direction. You know, we get proper meals after every training session, and we just heard today that Super Value are going to supply meals for us as well, for every day of the week, the days that we're not training too. So that's a great step forward for the ladies' game, and hopefully it'll just go from strength to strength from here on in now.
And yourself, Orla, like, since you started playing, have you found your game has changed?
Yeah, I suppose it has. You know, I think even the way the games are playing, and you know, even the tactics wise, I suppose when I started playing in 2011, you know, we were out just playing, you know, playing our best that we could. But now there's so much involved in the setup. It's been a big change in the last number of years, but as I say, in a good way too.
Mm-hmm. And what about commitment wise? You must be flat out trying to juggle the full time job and the training and everything. And the commitment has risen over the years.
Yes, it definitely has. But I suppose that just the standards we set for ourselves are very high. You know, you meet three or four times a week as a squad, and then you've your gym sessions as well. But so that's what you have to be doing to be thereabouts and getting back to big games. And I suppose I'm just used to it now. It's part of my life, and I'm lucky. I'm a primary school teacher, so I'm off now for the next 2 months. So that will give me time to focus on, you know, on my training and recovery. So I'm very lucky with that.
Yeah, I think it's probably the perfect job, really, if you want to be an intercounty player, primary school teaching, but any teaching.
Yeah.
And Orla, just before I let you go, Championship is coming up this weekend. How are you fixed for it?
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. We've meet now on Saturday, and we've tipped it the following week. So we'll take those two games first in the group stages, and we'll just give it our all. You know, meet on Saturday, they're going to have a lot of confidence behind them. They're just after coming up to Division 1. In the league, they won the Division 2 league last weekend, so they'll have that confidence behind them, and we'll have to be at our best, you know, to go out there and put on a good performance. So, no, we're really looking forward to Championship now.
And is success defined as the All-Ireland title and that's it for you?
No, I suppose, like that's the ultimate, but, you know, you have to go out and put in a good performance as a team, and that's what we strive to do every game we go out, just to improve bit by bit. But I suppose the ultimate is to win the All-Ireland final, yes, and I suppose we haven't won that in the last number of years, so it would be lovely to be back there again this year. But we're not going to take any game for granted. We're going to go out there and give each game our all and see where that takes us.
Okay, well, Orla, best of luck at the weekend. Meath first and then Tipperary, and see what happens after that. And congratulations again on both of your awards, the PWC Player of the Month Award and also making the Lidl Team of the 2021 Ladies National Football League. And best of luck over the next few months.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now it is just over an hour to kick off between Italy and Spain in that Euro semi-final. Louise Quinn is with me in studio. Louise, we have the teams. Any big talking points?
You know, not too much from the Italy squad, kind of what we maybe expected. Emerson in for Spinazzola, obviously very, very unfortunate with his Achilles injury. And I suppose it was a toss-up between Berardi and Chiesa, so Chiesa's in. But I suppose then the biggest sort of surprise for Spain is that Morata, for the first time, isn't starting, you know, in the tournament. And so they have Oyarzabal in instead. So I don't know if he's maybe seeing if it's tiredness now. So this is Spain's they've just played two extra time games in a row, so I'm not sure if it's fatigue, if it's a little bit of injury, or maybe just kind of confidence.
Yeah, and look, I think they have been lacking a bit of cutting edge as well, so maybe mixing things up will bring that out of them.
Exactly, yeah, that little bit of fire. Obviously, we've kind of seen that they were struggling for goals, but then had a brilliant game, you know, where they put away five. But they still are kind of weak at the back, and that's what Italy are going to hope to be exposing. Chiesa, Immobile, and Insigne have just got a lot of confidence now. They maybe don't come with a lot of goals, but they all contribute.
Okay, and just in terms of how the game is going to play out, Louise, what are you expecting?
I'm going to go for a 2-0 Italy win. Yeah. And my ma predicted it at the start of the tournament that Italy would win it, so I'm going to go with her, and a couple of friends have them in the work polls as well, so yeah, I'm still going to back Italy all the way.
All right, and then just a line on tomorrow's semi-final as well, England and Denmark. Who do you think will be joining Italy in the final if they do get there?
I'm still finding it tough. I still feel like, you know, England still need that flair, and Denmark have the absolute heart and passion for it now. And obviously Denmark are an excellent team, but I don't know if the adrenaline is maybe going to run out for the game. But there's a lot of pressure on England, and you know, and Denmark are going to be the favourites, and I think everyone's going to be pushing for them. So yeah, if England get that to their heads, they're going to have a real struggle.
Yeah, well, there has been a lot of people saying football's coming home. We will find out soon enough, and those two semi-finals are on RTE2 television and also on the RTE player. Louise Quinn, thank you so much for coming in, and best luck with the search for a club. No doubt you will find somewhere, and looking forward to seeing you, hopefully anyway, in the WSL next year. Thanks for coming in. Tara Stewart is up next.